This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Okay, Sharp Money, DraftKings, VSiN, the sports betting network, as we welcome you back. The Rockies did play two in the bottom of the six, so 5-2, our overs on life support. Maybe we'll get there. Middle seven, 5-2 Dodgers lead. The Orioles continue to mash, up 7-1 over the Yankees. A top three got runner on second and third with one out. So the Orioles got runners on second and third, big guy. Not looking great.
No, it has not been a banner day. It's not been a banner 48 hours for your boy over here betting baseball, we'll be honest with you.
You sound depressed about it.
I am. It's not going well. It's just not going well.
Okay. Well, we'll pick it up because we're going to be joined by our buddy. I think he just got off the call for Bally's. Jensen Lewis, of course, MLB Network on SiriusXM host. Bally's Sports, Cleveland analyst. He does the pre and post for the Guardians. At JLou50 on Twitter. Give me a thumbs up or thumbs down if we're good to go with Jensen there, big guy.
We're all good to go.
Okay, great. Jensen Lewis joins us. Jensen picked up a W on the pre and post there, two straight over the Mariners. Welcome.
What's going on, boys? Great to be back with you.
Great to have you. Let's talk about the current state of your Guardians there. They are your fourth betting favorite, or, you know, right now, to come out of the American League, they're 7-1, your fourth betting favorite. And as far as overall, they are 14-1 to win the World Series. Give me your thoughts, overview on the Guardians right now.
Yeah, and thinking about it, you know, honestly, Patrick, when you could see where the early preseason numbers were, of course, a lot of focus in the American League going to be in that American League East and also in the American League West. But to think you could have had value on the Guardians at almost 70-1 to win the World Series before the season, I don't know if anyone would have been drawing anything more than pizza money on it, but it's a credit to Stephen Vogt, this entire coaching staff, of course, Chris Antonetti and Mike Chernoff for everything they've done that's put together. And then really the players. I mean, guys, it really has been fascinating to watch how this group, series in and series out, continues to execute at a pretty high level. And, you know, from a national perspective, there's probably not a ton of star power where people are associated with household names outside of Jose Ramirez. Maybe Emmanuel Clase, but I think Stephen Kwan now has firmly cemented himself amongst the national talking points and headlines. I think Josh Naylor has put himself there as well. And now you got the supporting cast helping out offensively with Andrés Giménez, David Fry, Will Brennan had a couple of home runs today, and the league's best bullpen as far as the statistics go. So the ingredients are there through the first 2.5 months of the season, but as you guys well know, it's about running the marathon, getting through the finish line of the regular season, and then what do you do in October? So for the first time in probably the last 5 to 6 years, this could be as active a trade deadline for the Guardians as buyers that we've seen in quite some time.
Well, and can we talk about the way this team is doing it this year, Jensen? Like, this was a team known for its pitching and light hitting offense, and it's been a complete role reversal. Now they're mashing the ball, and the offense is picking up the pitching, and it's really been shocking to see. How surprised are you by that? And also, how is Jose Ramirez still 30-1 over at DraftKings for AL MVP? What is this team without him?
Yeah, you know, honestly, Dustin, I think you can even circle Stephen Kwan now as one of those dark horse long shot MVP candidates, because if he continues to hit anywhere near 400 after the All-Star break, it is going to be a sight to behold. But you're right. This is a team that is usually predicated off of dominant, deep starting pitching. We thought after two starts from Shane Bieber that, oh, my God, 2020, Shane Bieber's going to be back. And unfortunately, the UCL injury ends up presenting itself, and he's lost for the season. I don't know if we could have expected the rotation to kind of hold the line the way that it has, knowing that it's such a catastrophic injury from not only a talent perspective, but also what he means in that clubhouse on a day-to-day basis. And Tanner Bibee deserves so much credit for taking the reins and becoming the staff ace. I mean, he has been as good as any starting pitcher, especially the last couple of weeks. But then the offensive side, I think, is the biggest shocker and really – for a team that was dead last in homers last year, guys, you know, I think they came into today 12th in the league, and they were a top 8 run scoring offense. that's been the difference maker from that standpoint. They've been able to slug. The OPS has been fantastic all year long. They've continued to run the bases and steal bases with relative ease, top 10 in that category as well. And a lot of this, too, is getting leads to their bullpen. I mean, they go about 6-7 arms deep down there for Stephen Vogt, and they have the best closer in the league right now in Emmanuel Clase. So it's really been a whole team effort and a difference of mentality from the offense to not just put the ball in play, but really impact first. They've wanted to really be powerful with those swings and get results and do damage far more so than we've seen in the last couple of seasons.
Our buddy Jensen Lewis, the best. He just got off his pre and post with Bally Sports and the Guardians. He joins us. We love talking to Jensen. So I need your help. I have to ask you about Luis Gil. So we're all excited about the Yankees and Orioles, obviously, this series. And we wanted to get a bet in during the show, so we laid it with Gil. Like, you look at his previous start against Boston, essentially 9 quality starts in a row. Today, Jensen, he doesn't get through the second. 8 hits, 7 earned, and got bounced after an inning and a third. Like, as a bettor, should we have been looking for some regression, or do you just throw this one out?
Yeah, I think there's plenty of reasons why you would want to jump on that train and continue riding it and realizing that he's been as good as anybody, not just for the Yankee rotation, but in all of big league baseball. Basically, the month of May was an absurdity. And coming into today, what the Yankees had won, I believe, 9 straight starts that he had gone out and taken the mound. So hard to find any regression. I mean, at some point you would think. I mean, the only start this year where he really got roughed up, so to say, was in Milwaukee when I believe that was his final start in April, where he gave up 5 runs in 5 innings. Outside of that, guys, he's pretty much given up 2 or fewer in every other start except 2 of them. And you know, that's all you ask for from a starting pitcher is to go do that. So, no, I don't think anyone could have foreseen that. Credit where it's due, though. Baltimore needed a big offensive performance. They've gotten that today. But as we all know, hot weather in Yankee Stadium during a day game, guys, no lead is safe. So we'll see how that one ends up.
Yeah, you mentioned Baltimore. We're talking about pitchers regressing. What about pitchers getting hurt in the Orioles? So I want to ask you about what's gone on with them. They've lost 3 starters this year to Tommy John surgery. Is this to you an organizational problem? Is this just today's pitcher problem? Is this a lack of sticky stuff problem? Like, the Orioles have lost 3 key members of their rotation to Tommy John surgery, and you as a former pitcher, what are you seeing?
Yeah, you know, Dustin, when you look at what Bradish, of course, is a huge loss for them, and John Means even coming back from injury this year and then having to go back and have the surgery again, it's such a gut punch for them. And, of course, this last year with Felix Bautista having TJ as well, their all-star closer, they were going to have to be in the business of finding ways to create a little bit more depth anyway with the uncertainty of some of those guys coming back from their injuries just last year. So now you kind of figure out that Mike Elias is going to be jumping on the phone, I would say, to probably the White Sox and asking what's going to take to get Garrett Crochet and be as feared a 1-2 punch with Burns and Crochet and Grayson Rodriguez to fill out that third spot. You would envision that's what they'd run out there in an October playoff series. But to your original question, and this has been something I've tried to sound the alarm on for a couple of years, was there's going to have to be a bit of an audit, if you will, of the weighted ball programs, the drive line, you know, and someone who's gone through that program as far as, you know, the long toss and the weighted balls on just an initial level. I have an idea what it does just having gone through it, but the ramp up and some of the other things where guys are trying to create increases in velocity over a short period of time, the human body and specifically a pitching arm is just not designed physiologically to do that in a short amount of time. Now, you can ramp it up over a season, you know, over a 6 to 8 month period. But if you're making astronomical gains in that short amount of time, to me, that's the big red flag. And unfortunately, there's guys that have tried to go through certain aspects of that program and have had these Tommy John injuries. So not laying it at the feet of the Driveline program in and of itself. There's a lot of things right now that are contributing to it. But I definitely believe that every organization is going to have to take a hard look at their in-season, off-season programs and make certain adjustments so that you can further, I think, curtail the increased probability of this happening year over year.
Jensen, I have 1 minute, so I'm putting you in a tough spot. As a former pitcher, explain what you're seeing from Paul Skeens.
must-see TV, boys. I mean, I was building patio furniture for his Major League debut, and I had it on the garage because I was not going to miss it. I mean, this is otherworldly stuff, and for him, he's so good about his pitch-to-pitch routine. He's so good about his work days in between, keeping himself in great shape. And the guy came from the Air Force, fellas. You know that he's got a great background. You know he's got a great pedigree. He's going to do what he needs to have his body in tip-top shape. Sky's the limit, fellas. I'll tell you right now, if the Pirates make the postseason as a wild card team, watch out. Skeens, Jared Jones, Mitch Keller in a three-game series, yikes. Would not want to be matched up against that.
Nobody's better than Jensen Lewis, longtime buddy, of course, MLB Network on SiriusXM. Bally's, he just got off the call there for a Guardians win at JLou50 on Twitter. Jensen, you're the best. Thank you.
You bet, boys.
Okay, there he goes. Jensen Lewis. Guy is a pro. Come back more with odds on the NBA draft, which is coming up next Wednesday. Then we got Kenny Danico talking puck. Sharp money. DraftKings, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Okay, VSiN.com, best bets, betting splits, exclusive articles, odds by state, betting tools, and betting guides. It's all there at the new VSiN.com. It's great on the mobile as well. We welcome you back, Sharp Money. DraftKings, VSiN, the sports betting network. Dustin Sweetelson, I'm Patrick Maher. We do have breaking NBA news. So we broke the J.J. Redick news earlier. He's going to become the next head coach of the Los Angeles Lakers. Some scorching takes going down about that. And we have a trade. Okay, so breaking news here. The Bulls are trading Alex Caruso to the Thunder for Josh Giddey. Caruso is extension eligible beginning July 6th. Caruso made a second straight all-defensive team this year. And it's really just about upside. We knew that Oklahoma City was going to be moved. It was an untenable situation in Oklahoma City with Josh Giddey. So we knew they would be moving on. The Bulls are buying upside because I can't think, and I mean this, I saw it pop up and I literally thought to myself, I can't think of a more perfect player for the Thunder than Alex Caruso. He is exactly what they need. He's not a good defenseman. He's not a good defensive player. I'm thinking hockey. He is an exceptional defender.
So he fits in that regard, right? Because they defend hard. They play hard. They're an aggressive team on that end of the floor. But he also is a veteran. And they desperately, that roster was so young to get the number one seed the way they did without veteran help. They need someone like this who's going to contribute, who's going to start, who's going to be a factor on the defensive end and help offensively, but more importantly, be a leader, a guy who's been through these battles before. I think he's going to be a massive, massive upgrade for them. I'm hoping they add another veteran or two to this team, but he is a perfect fit. I completely agree. He's going to blend right in there with the Thunder.
So we were having a little fun with the – so again, Caruso to the Thunder and Josh Giddey to Chicago. Okay. We were having fun with the draft. The draft is, look, you never know. And a lot of this is so much speculation because we don't know a ton of the players. Like, for example, I'll give you this. It's coming up next Wednesday, the NBA draft. You can find the market over at DraftKings and have fun. But be careful. So, for example, my Pistons are picking 5. A lot of the, I guess, the mocks, big guy, have them taking Matas Bouzelis.
Oh.
Matas is a 6'9", 197-pound shooting forward. He's American and Lithuanian. Mm. He plays in the G League. Nobody's ever heard of him.
and he is right now going to be a top five pick. Can you do have his number as far as DraftKings on a top five for a toss?
Yes. Stand by draft. To be drafted top five, Matas is minus 150.
Now, here's let me ask you a question. What does the market say about Dalton Kincaid? This is what I'd be doing.
Yes.
Again, I understand as a shooting guard and forward, he's undersized at 6'5". I get it. And I know he's 23 years old. But this guy is buckets.
Yeah,
he's a walking bucket. He's wet. And again, he is take it easy. I think he could go as high as like 5 or 6. And I think if you look at his top 10 odds and top 5 odds, I think he could get a pretty good price. But his shooting and shot making versatility is off the we saw it at Tennessee, it's off the charts.
So I just because this draft class isn't super sexy, right? I don't think the asking prices for trades are going to be as much as we normally see for people to trade up. Dalton Kincaid feel like the type of trade a team that is a playoff fringe team that's looking for more scoring help would trade up to try and get into to take him? Because he is experienced. He's a little bit older. He'll be able to blend right in right away. And you know right away he's going to score. And if that's what you need more bench scoring, someone who can shoot from the outside. It feels like a good guy for a team on the fringe of the playoffs to go out and get.
Yeah, so we've been talking. So on the outside, kind of the periphery, again, we don't know. But this looks like the 2024 NBA draft. Looks like it potentially could be the worst draft in the history of the NBA. It's beyond bad. So we started thinking, what's the worst ever? Now, I don't know how the 2024 class is going to turn out, but the 2013 NBA draft class said, hold my beer. Let's go through it. And I think most of you, as soon as I give you the first name, you're just going to be like, LOL. And it's very fitting. My man played at UNLV. Anthony Bennett went number one overall to the Cleveland Cavaliers. Anthony Bennett.
All right.
Obviously, didn't work out.
No. But if we're going to be fair, based on the other guys picked like right after him, it doesn't look as bad of a swing and miss when you grade it on a curve of what the other top five options were.
Yeah, and that's the well. Now number two actually had some success. I think he was an all-star. Victor Oladipo.
Yeah,
he's fine.
Fine.
Oladipo went to the Magic. It doesn't get better, people. Number three, Otto Porter Jr., who somehow got paid
Max.
Because that 1 year in Washington, he stood in the corner and stroked threes. Otto Porter Jr. went three overall. Number four, is this inspiring? Cody Zeller went to the Charlotte Bobcats at the time in 2013. I'm not kidding, people. Cody Zeller was number four in 2013.
Cody Zeller, Mason Plumlee, same person.
Number five.
This is.
And I'm not kidding. Alex Len went to the Phoenix Suns at number five, the big donk center out of Maryland.
Wait, can you just talk, just reflect for a moment of what you just said. Cody Zeller at four, Alex Len at five, and we just had a conversation about Donovan Klingon at one. Again, I bet it because I think it's possible and I like the number. But you can't take a 7-footer at number one if you're an organization trying to win in today's NBA. And back in 2013, that was the beginning of us seeing that.
It does start to get interesting. So Nerlens Noel, total bust, went six. Ben McLemore, total bust, went seven.
Thought he was going to be a star.
Kendavious Caldwell-Pope, very good player. My Pistons. And Joe Dumars drafted him. Now, they didn't hold on to him for too long, but they drafted him out of Georgia.
But we're talking at number eight. If he was drafted at number three, how would you feel about him?
Right. I mean, he's a very good defensive player, won a champion. Like, again, it's Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. I'm not going crazy. Number nine was Trey Burke. Are you kidding? Number 10, and this is where these drafts get interesting, CJ McCollum, a tremendous pro.
And he's only number 10 because he's from a small school.
Yeah. Lehigh. Number 11, Michael Carter-Williams.
By the way, that's your bust. That's your rookie of the year, though, Michael Carter-Williams of this
right,
class.
But then ends up being a bust. Yeah. 12, and this is Oklahoma City from Toronto via Houston, but ended up being a good pro. Steven Adams.
From New Zealand to Pittsburgh to Oklahoma City, and he's had a very good career. He was injured this past year. He'll come back and play again next year. Very, very solid player.
So this draft class this year is a disaster on paper, and we're running back to 2013 draft class to see if we can find something to rival it. Number 13 had a nice career, Kelly Olynyk.
Absolutely.
Shabazz Muhammad at 14.
Wow. He was supposed to be a superstar.
Yeah, no, he very much was not. Now here's where we get to why the draft is still so intriguing. The second best player on God's earth right now went 15 to the Milwaukee Bucks out of Greece, Giannis.
I think this proves a greater point that you've said for a long time. No matter how bad the class is, NFL or NBA, there is someone there to build around. You just have to find them. And in this instance, back in 13, the Bucks found Giannis.
Yeah, my guy John Hammond drafted him. John Hammond, when I was a kid in broadcast and used to do the Pistons broadcast as the donk that would just be like, can you guys hear me? John Hammond used to do a spot with George Blaha. And I'd be like, does John Hammond have a headset? And Hammond was the, hi, Patrick, how are you? Literally never would even, I don't even know if I was getting paid. Nicest guy ever. Good talent evaluator. Next up in 13, we had Lucas Nogueira from Brazil. I've never heard of him.
I don't know who that is.
Dennis Schroeder went 17. Good player. Shane Larkin, your boy, went 18.
He was fun in college, but I think he's like 5'6".
Never heard of the next one. 19 was Sergei Karasev.
No
Tony
idea.
Snell.
Fine. Bench guy.
Gorgui Dieng. Mason Plumlee. I see him on the strand. Fine. 22. Maybe that's value. Solomon Hill.
Got nope. G'd up.
Tim Hardaway Jr. Reggie Bullock. Oh. Had a career.
Okay.
So we keep going. And then you get to Rudy Gobert at 27.
Again, another point, though. You can find guys and develop guys at this point.
I'm trying to see if we found anybody late.
No, that's it. That's the end.
Yeah, that's the end. Just a bunch of names you've never heard of.
And a bunch of just like journeymen who are okay.
Game 6 tomorrow night in Edmonton, Stanley Cup final. We're getting hype. And we're going to get the answer from one of the greats. 3-time Stanley Cup champion Ken Danico joins us next here on Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Okay, spring special, sign up, $199, 13 months, VSIN.com/subscribe. Unlock using the promo code SHARP. Okay, to say we have some juice in the Stanley Cup final is an understatement. Tomorrow is going to be electric up in Edmonton, of course. The Oilers have forced a game 6, trail 3-2 in the series to the Panthers. I'm excited for this conversation. One of the greats, Mr. Devil himself, Kent Danico, is going to join us to discuss. NHL Network analyst, 3-time Stanley Cup champion, also calls the Devil's game there on MSG. First off, it's a thrill to talk to you, Ken. Thank you for joining us. And those that don't know, did grow up in Edmonton, so we should start there. That barn is going to be buzzing, to say the least, tomorrow night.
Well, I will tell you, you're not in the building. You're in the mosh pit. And if you have no room there, you're at home and the TV is on. Everybody in Edmonton loves their hockey throughout Canada, as we know. So it is going to be nuts. I know my sister, I got her 2 tickets for the game. She's elated because she is a diehard Devils fan. She can't wait for game 6 tomorrow night. Should be electrifying. Yep.
It's good to have a brother named Ken Danico if you're up in Edmonton. How did we get here? Okay, so 3 dominant games from the Panthers. You know, even strength, it does appear much better team. Then all of the sudden, you had that 8-1 on Saturday and then just an awesome performance the other night on Tuesday. How did we get here to game 6?
Well, I think the greatest player in the world put the Oilers on his back is basically what transpired. Yes, he got some support and help from the unlikely sources that you have to have this time of year, like a Connor Brown and Fogle and other guys along the way. And Stuart Skinner in net, the big question mark going in for a lot of people where everybody thought Florida had the big advantage. They did in the first three games, even though Skinner, I thought, was okay. Bob was being Bob, and he was outstanding throughout the playoffs. And then the Oilers found a little wrinkle in there and were able to score a few goals on them late in that or in the second half of game three. And they haven't looked back. And McDavid, 8 points in the last two games. He's been miraculous. What else can we say about him? I mean, it shows his maturity because you're demoralized down 3-0. I've been there. I've been on both sides of it. And just from experience, you have to find a way, and the great ones do. And he has really gone to, again, another level, if that is even possible, for the greatest player in the world, and Connor McDavid. He has just been outstanding. And right now, Bobrovsky has faltered a little bit. They have not as good in front of them, the Florida Panthers, and they've got to get back to that. And it's funny how we expect the unexpected, the unpredictable, but you didn't think you could shut down Connor McDavid an entire series. They had the first three games where he had 0 points. Well, not anymore with the 8 points in the last two games. And now we got ourselves a heck of a dogfight here the rest of the way.
We do. The great Kenny Danico joining us, Progressive guest line here on Sharp Money. Let's focus on Bobrovsky and help us understand, Ken, the idea of a goaltender maybe getting in his head, feeling a little rattled. You mentioned he was exquisite through three games and the last two, not so much. What will be the mindset of Bobrovsky going into game six?
Well, look, you look at it two ways, in my opinion. You look at the Oilers, and I don't think they ever thought they were going to score a goal in particular after the first two and a half games where they'd had a total of three goals in the three games, and then all of a sudden Florida's up three goals. Oilers get a couple, even though it didn't add up to anything. They didn't get the win, and they lose, but they did get three goals in game three, and then all of a sudden maybe they get a little confidence. Confidence is a funny thing, and they get a little belief that, okay, maybe we found a little edge here. Maybe we know how to beat Bobrovsky. We might hear that. We usually do after a series. Have they found a weakness, whatever it may be. But in Bobrovsky now, all of a sudden, you know, you start questioning, you doubt, and guys don't play as positionally sound. That's what Florida's strength is, depth and their defensive structure, and obviously their heavy forecheck. And Edmonton has been able to expose it with stretch passes, getting outnumbered situations, but now they've found finish. Now they've been able to bury some of those good opportunities. And Bobrovsky hasn't bailed the Panthers out on this on the last two games where he did all playoffs long when they needed it. So they got to play better in front of them. They got to get back to their game. I'm not saying Florida might not win game six. I predicted before the series it was going seven and Florida was going to win in seven. I may not be that far off just yet. It didn't look promising when they were down 3-0 or up 3-0, Florida was, and Edmonton was down 3-0. So now Bobrovsky just got to get everything out of his head, as the Panthers do. Go play a game. You would probably take this. That's you use the cliche. If we said before the season we'd be up 3-2 in the Stanley Cup Finals, no matter how we got here, no matter what's gone on the last two games, go win a hockey game. That's why it's only been done once in history where a team has come back from a 3-0 deficit in the Stanley Cup Finals, and that was back in 1942, the Toronto Maple Leafs, I believe. That's why it's never been done, because it is hard to beat a team four games in a row. The Oilers have some belief, no question, and their fans, but Bobrovsky, support him here, especially out of the start. First period, make him see the puck. Let him make some easy saves, get a feel, and get that confidence back.
So, Ken Danico, you're built a little different, but let's go to your scenario of a Game 7 down in Florida. If the Panthers go up tomorrow night and lose to the Oilers, talk about pressure coming back. Again, you're a little different. Let's not use you. But in that locker room, if it's now tied up at threes and we go back home to Florida, what will the Panthers be feeling?
Well, I won't sugarcoat the fact, yeah, there will be immense pressure on the Florida Panthers in particular, because you were up 3-0, and most people, most of the hockey world, the media predicted that the Florida Panthers were going to win the Stanley Cup because they're the deeper team, the better team through and through. Although I guess at times we forget again, when you have the greatest player in Connor McDavid, like the Edmonton Oilers do, that they do special things. He's done special things for 2 games. Can he do it again in game 6? I happen to think just maybe it's going to go 7. And, yeah, Florida will feel that pressure. But it's one game take all, and you have to block it out. I know it's easier said than done, but you have to just regroup and figure it out. You'll be at home if that happens, if Florida has to go back for a game 7 in their building. And then it's one game, winner takes all. I usually take a quarter out of my pocket and flip it and call heads or tails. And that's what I feel about game 7s. A break, a bounce, a save, a post, whatever it may be, is the difference. The margin for error is very slim, and it's who executes better. And so we will see. But, yes, no question, if Florida loses game 6, the pressure is on the Florida Panthers.
Ken, last question. We just have 2 minutes. And what else can be said about Connor McDavid? But I'm watching game 5, and I'm like, what the hell am I watching? When he's downhill on his skates, it's almost like it's freakish. He's unbelievable.
Yeah, it really is. And we've said so many superlatives about Connor McDavid throughout his career and things he does at high speed that we've never really seen in the game. I mean, look at that fourth goal and the setup for Corey Perry where there were 4 Panthers around him. Well, that started in the neutral zone, and the great ones, and Wayne Gretzky, Mary Lemieux, you name it, during my time, these guys know what they're going to do. They have a plan when they have that puck at the red line. And Connor McDavid had a plan the whole way, and the edge work and the strength on the puck when guys are draped all over him, and then to settle it down and get it across to Perry is remarkable, and that's why he is who he is, and he's a special player. But for him, I will tell you right now, and he may win the Conn Smythe, everybody's saying, even in a losing effort, which I never loved, regardless, he has been the best player in the playoffs, whether they win or lose. But he wants to win. He wants to win it all, and it's not going to mean nearly as much to him getting all these bats in the back if his team doesn't come all the way back here and win the Stanley Cup. But as a hockey fan in general with no horse in the race or skin in the game, he's just a treat and a pleasure to watch because that's what it's all about, watching great players do their thing. He's been doing it all playoffs.
Well, it's a treat to talk to you, Ken Danico, NHL Network analyst, 3-time Stanley Cup champ, of course, MSG Network with the Devils. He is Mr. Devil. Enjoy the hockey. I hope your sister enjoys the game as well. Thank you, Ken. Appreciate the time.
My pleasure. Great being on with you.
All right, buddy. Thank you. Progressive guest line, Ken Danico. Let me just say this, big guy. If you told me as a Red Wings fan,
I know,
as a kid, that I'd be talking to Ken Danico as a 46-year-old man, I would have said, I would have been swearing at him.
No, you couldn't have handled it. It would have been too emotional.
We could, there were 2 teams. It was Colorado and New Jersey. And we didn't dislike the teams and the players. We hate, like, Ken Danico was enemy number 1.
Well, and they were
because
all
because he was a tough SOB.
Yeah. They were tough, defensive. They had a great goalie in Brodeur. They didn't
they ran that gross trap. I don't even want to talk about it.
But what a guy. He's awesome.
Family Vids next.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Sharp Money, DraftKings, VSIN, the sports betting network. We've got plenty to do in our final segment here as we welcome you back. I'm Patrick Maher, live from Los Angeles. Dustin Sweetelson, downtown Las Vegas at the D. We've got a family vid with our buddy Aaron Halterman, Plus Money Prince. You're going to hear from Tom Brady.
Oh.
He was on The Herd with Colin Cowherd. Shout to John Goulet. Who, by the way, Colin Cowherd has a burger bar right on the pier, right down the street.
Oh,
he owns it with Lopez, the comedian.
Oh, George. They're going to go Mario.
No, George Lopez and Cowherd own a burger joint.
George
right down the street.
That is quite a combination of human beings. I'm fascinated by the origins of this now.
Hey, I'm also fascinated by this. Now, I know Friday we're going to be joined by one Mike Somich.
Yes.
Superstar. VSiN host, The Handle. Great write-up from Bill AD about his strategy in the daily newsletter today. You can go enter your email address for free and get the daily newsletter every single day from the man of mystery, one Bill AD. And Somich is, you know, is just literally one of the sharpest people around. But I have a question for you, Dustin Sweetelson. Do you think that Mike Somich has ever heard of Friendship?
Oh, I see what you're getting at. I think Mike is an inconsistent friend.
I think you're saying that kindly. Remember when he guilted me for not listening to a podcast recommendation?
And then you did it?
And then I did it and then sent him a report because I felt so guilty about it. But that was intense when he guilted me. So
yeah, I mean, I told you to watch Ted Lasso like 2 years ago. You still haven't. I'm not holding that against you. I just accept you for who you are.
But I was like, man, Somich is being a horrific friend. He wasn't buzzing in the chat the other night. Halterman killing it. And then I started thinking, like, today I had a question for him, but I didn't text him because bad friend.
Sure.
And I'm like, I wonder if Somich is okay. And then I open up the daily newsletter, and he's all over it. He's writing articles over at VSiN.com. So I guess I'll just have to ask him to start tomorrow. Have you heard of Friendship? Because it doesn't feel like you have.
Oh, okay. But it does feel like we've had this conversation a couple times now. And it's like, at what point does he start to adapt and be a better friend? Like,
it's a great question.
You can only call someone out on their stuff so many times. Be like, hey, man, you're not holding up your end of the bargain. We have this whole thing called the family, which, by the way, started with Mike Somich is like family member number one, right?
Correct.
He was the first person not actually on the show we considered part of the show. Yet, I mean, it's been like 2 weeks since we've had a family video from Mike Somich.
Well, stick around for tomorrow, and we will ask him. You know, he's big time, The Handle.
He's busy.
Him and Matt Brown, Saturdays and Sundays. I get it. Sharp, still living off Maige, but this idea that he's just bailed as far as friendship. Oh, by the way, if you got involved with the family plays today, we do send apologies because we took the collar. The Dodgers, who scored a billion runs early, they parked the bus 5-3 over the Rockies. That over's dead. The Orioles lead in the bottom of the fifth. The Yankees 11-3. We were on the Yankees.
Well, technically, the first five's not dead yet, officially.
I guess it's not officially dead. And then what was the other under
Seth
outs?
Lugo, under 18 and a half outs, he gets 20 outs.
We did it!
Yes, we did, Larry. We did it. We went 0-3.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just got to move on. Nothing to see here, people. Let's get to our family vid.
Oh, that's baseball, Susan. That's what it is. It's baseball. All right.
Yeah.
We do have a great member of the family. He's a fantastic guy. He has a great attitude. He comes up when we need him when we're in a bind on a Wednesday and we need a hockey guest. He steps up to the plate. And that's why Aaron Halterman wasn't on the show today, because he did his spot on Wednesday with us. But he always sends us family plays when he's not on the show. You know him from RacingDudes.com. Due to Bet Sports Podcast, and here he is with a baseball Sharp Money family play for today.
Sharp Money family play.
Yo, what's up, Sharp Money? Back here for Thursday here. I'm going to go Milwaukee Brewers -105. Not much going on tonight. Just a couple of games to kind of choose from in Major League Baseball. So I'll go Milwaukee -105 on the road against the Padres. Here's the deal. The Padres have been on the road for a long time now. Kind of a long road trip back from the East Coast to San Diego. While the Brewers, you know, they were in L.A. playing the Los Angeles Angels and now just a short trip down to San Diego. So believe it or not, even though San Diego is the home team, the Brewers should be the more rested team. Also, you look at the pitching matchup, Bryce Wilson. Yeah, he's an adequate pitcher for the Brewers. Going up against Adam Mazur, he's been up and down. He is a rookie for the Padres. I think he's going to be okay, but he's kind of been up and down. He's also kind of on a pitch limit. Even if he has a great game, he's only going to probably go 4 or 5 innings. So Brewers are a better team overall, I think, as well. I think they'll hit Mazur enough. So at this price at minus 105. It just makes a lot of sense to me to play the Brewers tonight. So I'm going to go Milwaukee Brewers minus 105 for my best bet of the day.
Okay, the best, racingdudes.com. Aaron Halterman, also a great friend. 110. So Tom Brady is going to be in your living rooms. He's omnipresent, it does appear. Yeah. Talking nonstop. They did a little USFL thing with him in the booth to kind of get people's palate wetted. And he's on a media tour right now. He went on The Herd with Colin Cowherd. And I want to hear what he has to say. What's up first?
Yeah, so the first item they discussed was having superstar weapons and receivers and feeling the need as a quarterback and an offense to work those guys in early. And here's what Tom Brady had to say about doing that as a strategy.
The best players touch the ball early so they can break a sweat. They can get into the flow of the game. And good coaches do that. When you script plays at the beginning of the game, you're saying, okay, you're the Niners coach. I'm going to make sure McCaffrey touches it either first or second in the game. I want to make sure Deebo Samuel touches it first or second in the game. I'm going to throw it to him quick. Somehow I know the ball is going to be in his hands so he can do something with it. I want to get him into the flow. So we would always try to script so that everybody would feel like they were in the flow of the game. The last thing you want is your number one receiver to go 2.5 quarters into a game and not see a ball to get one target. Because he's going to get discouraged. He's got to go out there. He's got to break the huddle. He's got to run out 25 yards to his alignment. He's got to run down the field as fast as he can, try to get open. He's got to run back to the huddle. It's a lot of effort that he's putting into not getting the ball.
Just a little inside the mind there of Tom Brady.
I kind of zoned out.
Yeah, everyone was getting hot and bothered by that clip. I thought it was good. Thought it was solid. There was nothing like revolutionary with it. Some of the other stuff he said
didn't do anything. It, you know what? It didn't do anything for me.
I don't blame you. I don't know what to expect from him.
When I zone out and I'm trying to focus, it's not on me. It's on him.
Yeah, I don't understand him doing this job. I'm just going to be straight up. I don't think he's ever said anything interesting. Now, I do know that he loves when people say things like that, and there's probably enough people saying that where he's going to work hard at it. So,
yeah, okay, cool.
Yeah.
By the way, so I told you I'm meeting up with a friend tonight.
Yes.
And I'm 46. You know how weird it would be if I told you I'm meeting up with a 24-year-old tonight?
Is she?
Now. No.
Oh.
Older. But however, And again, this is not my business. This is not TMZ, but I was thinking about it. So the Belichick story is very prominent now and very out in the open. So Bill Belichick, 72, he's dating a 24-year-old. The slept-on part of the story is when he met her was 3 years ago.
Oh.
Do the math, people.
Oh.
It's consenting adults. No judgment.
Barely.
There's no judgment, but odds. Interesting story.
Barely consenting adults. Like we're on the fringes of being
an adult. Hollering. She was 21, talking Marcus Aurelius.
I mean, the confidence of Bill Belichick to shoot his shot that way with a 21-year-old.
Dude, you know what he did, though? It's so corny. He signed her book, and then he wrote down the championships.
No.
Yeah, he wrote down the numbers.
Not his phone number?
Well, not that too.
I've done that on a lot of bills at restaurants where I've signed the bill with a big fat tip. And then I wrote, in case you're interested, here's my number.
Well, he gave the number because he was interested in continuing the conversation about Plato.
Oh, sure.
Close tabs, last minute of the show. What do you got?
Yeah, let's see. First off, Josh Applebaum said his fourth best friend is getting married. I would also rank my friends in number order, but I only have one.
Yeah, I was going to say four. I was going to ask Josh, do you know his name?
Ken Danico was on the show. Ken Danico revealed to me on Sunday that when he had the Stanley Cup, him and his children ate cereal out of the Stanley Cup. Patrick, what would you put in the Stanley Cup to eat or drink out of if you had a day with it?
Avocado.
Not popcorn?
Oh, yeah, popcorn. I couldn't come up with that.
That's what I figured. Popcorn. I would go Fruity Pebbles. Fruity Pebbles would be mine. Also, PSA, Patrick and I have learned the hard way, so you don't have to do this. Apricots are in season. Your grocery store is pushing them
Overrated. Hard.
They're really not a good fruit. I've eaten
three
of them.
They're apparently in season.
They taste like
they don't
nothing.
Taste like anything in season. What do they taste like out of season?
They stink.
It's a good job by you. We'll see you tomorrow. Sharp Money.